It's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
Oh, what a wonderful Monday. Here is the first Monday of November the 3rd, 2025. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Colin Russo with you. We got Damian Perez behind the glass today. No Mike Rizzo today, but it's still Russo and Rizzo nonetheless. Got a packed program ahead. Got you for the next 3 hours today. We got, of course, the fifth quarter presented by Hard Rock Bet, which is coming up in the 6 to 7 p.m. hour. We got a lot to talk about. We had a packed NFL Sunday, finally a good NFL Sunday with some back-and-forth affairs and some one-possession scored games. We also had a good college football weekend with a lot of schools, namely in the ACC, who have squandered their chances to get into the college football playoff. And, of course, from Game 6 to Game 7, we saw as good of a finish as you will see in the World Series that in recent memory. It's better than 2017 Astros-Dodgers, and it is comparably good to that fantastic, otherworldly 2016 come from behind 3-1 comeback that the Cubs have over the Indians back in 2016. That is how good this series was. That is how good this baseball postseason was, and especially with Game 7 on Saturday night, which did about 26 million in the ratings, 31 peak, which is the highest sporting event, non-NFL, non-Olympics that we've seen in years. Higher than college football, higher than all of it. So a lot of people tuned in, and it was a great, great game. Got a lot to do. It should be a lot of fun. Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. Also on the ESPN South Florida app. Catch us over there. And also, phone lines are going to be open. We'll get to Damian in a second. 888-760-3776, number to get into the program. Damian Perez, we'll get into my thoughts, but for those who didn't see, of course, Los Angeles Dodgers drop Game 5 in their building. They go back to Toronto to play two games and down 3-2. They're able to steal Game 6, 3-1, in which a game that is highlighted by a wedgie play, which is when the ball gets stuck in between the cushioning of the outfield and the ground, the warning track, and it is an automatic ground rule double. This is when two runs, maybe one, definitely one, maybe two runs could have scored and ended up being a ground rule double. They had men on third and second and did not score, and that was with the Blue Jays in the bottom of the ninth with a chance to win the World Series. And then what we saw in Game 7, 5-4, 11 innings, three solo shots in a row for the Dodgers after being down 4-2, starting with Max Muncy in the eighth, and then Miguel Rojas, of all people, who hadn't had a home run against a right-handed pitcher all year, takes Jeff Hoffman, a very good, if not great, reliever, with one out in the top of the ninth. Everything on the line there. Shohei Ohtani on deck. Solo shot to tie the game at four apiece, going to the 11th inning, and Will Smith, hero Will Smith, who made a number of great plays throughout, who has been a consistent piece and player for that Dodger team, was able to get the go-ahead solo shot home run off of Shane Bieber to eventually win them their second straight World Series, the first back-to-back World Series champion in just about 25 years since the Yankees did it. Baseball, we think, has some sort of parity, but we might be on the precipice of a new dynasty. 13 out of 14 division titles for the Dodgers. I mean, they've had three World Series in 6 years. They've been to a number of more. Because of that, I would say we're probably in the midst of a dynasty, but it was as good as it gets. Toronto squandered about three or four different major opportunities to win that game. As good of a Game 7 as I could remember. Damian Perez, I know you were doing Inter-Miami on Saturday night, but you were able to watch this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us a little bit of when you thought the Dodgers were dead, when you thought maybe they're alive. When did you think that the Blue Jays were really going to blow this game?
See, that's the thing. That game was just such an up-and-down roller coaster game. Overall, I think it was a huge win for the MLB. I know going into the season, all that was talked about was the little bit of parity that the MLB had. Everybody thought the Dodgers were going to win. They were this evil empire. And although they did end up winning the World Series, that was probably one of the better World Series that I can remember. And the last two games, the suspense that it had, the movie quality, because it really was a movie
quality. It was cinematic. It really was.
Absolutely cinematic. You would have thought it would have been someone like Ohtani, Freeman, maybe Mookie Betts that would have hit that tying run, but it was the bottom of the order, Miguel Rojas. So overall, I thought it was a huge win for MLB, and like I said, one of the better World Series I've seen in a long time.
Game 7, at that point when it went to extras, tied at 4 apiece, after the Blue Jays had opportunity after opportunity, most namely when Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who was at third base, bases loaded, one out, who had a short lead off of third, which people have given him flack for because they thought he should have had a bigger lead. Dead wrong on that front. But he was late coming into the bag. He got tied out on a force out at home from Miguel Rojas. And then finally, with two outs, bases loaded, going down deep to left center field, getting caught by Andy Páez. One of the great catches you'll ever see in a big spot in the postseason that basically, again, saved the Dodgers' season. Once it went into extras, do you think it was the Dodgers to lose or the Blue Jays to lose?
I thought it was the Dodgers to lose. I feel like the life just got absolutely sucked out of that stadium once Miguel Rojas hit that home run. And after that, I just didn't see a world where the Dodgers lost that World Series, if I'm going to be honest.
Do you think it's better for, I guess, the fan that we saw the Dodgers win two in a row, or would it have been better for the fan for the Blue Jays to win in a Classic?
It probably would have been better if the Blue Jays won in a Classic. But like I said at the beginning, everyone thought that the Dodgers were probably going to sweep or just lose maybe one of those games in the World Series. But it ended up being a World Series where it kind of went down to the wire.
Do you think the Dodgers being this good is a problem for baseball?
Yes, it is. It is a problem and it has to be addressed. I think the whole cap situation.
Deferred money.
Deferred money. In a way, it's a cheap way of winning because not all the teams have an equal playing field.
Has a farm system for basically all of Japan.
It just takes away the parity. Let's be honest. I mean, I know the Blue Jays put up a great fight in this World Series, but how many teams can go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers like the Blue Jays did? There's probably not many.
So the last thing I'll say, well, we're going to continue on this. We're going to do a whole lot on the baseball. 888-760-3776. Where does this rank in terms of great sporting events you've watched this year and great World Series you've ever watched? 2025 World Series. The Dodgers taking it in 7 over the Toronto Blue Jays. 888-760-3776, number to get into the program. The one thing I agree with Damian, going into the series, I thought I was actually rooting actively for the Dodgers to win easy, because them going in and basically only losing one game up until that World Series, I thought them dominating would give more credence, more validity to the argument and eventual, I guess, the confrontation that will happen.
It's like what's going on with the tush push
right now. When they will go to the salary cap. And when they see if, hey, do we need a salary cap? Do we need a floor? Do we need to ban deferred money? The next CBA is up over a year from now. We can't keep circling back to the CBA, but that was the reason why I wanted the Dodgers to win. I wanted the actual Players Association and the owners to finally do it, to finally call it. Don't make it another 94 strike. Finally establish a salary cap on the floor. That was what I wanted. After the Blue Jays were able to fight back in the series, and you thought, boy, does this team not go away? And that's a team that thoroughly outplayed the Dodgers, I'm going to say throughout the entire series. The better team probably did not win the World Series. That's, you could go to the lengths of saying that. That the best team probably did not win. Toronto Blue Jays played better than the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Toronto Blue Jays consistently outputted offensively more than the Dodgers. But what this shows you is that not only are the Dodgers a well-constructed, well-put-together team, they basically threw out the four aces in Game 7 to pitch. Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Shohei Ohtani, and Yamamoto, who was pitching on 0 days rest, which we'll get into him in a moment. But they were that well-constructed that it didn't even take the Stars to win that game. You want to know, baseball is the great equalizer. It is the perfect game at its best. I think when baseball is in a picture-perfect environment where it's pitch by pitch, you're living and dying by each breath and each specific play, baseball at its core, in my opinion, is the best game. But when you get to that, it's also the great equalizer to parity. It's impossible to be so great in today's day and age. There's so much randomness. There's so much getting hot at the right time. It's impossible to determine who's going to be great for that 20-game stretch. And maybe last 25 years, there was some validity to that argument. Now that the Dodgers have won two in a row, it just goes to show how well constructed they were because they hit 200 throughout the entire series. You didn't have much at all outside of Freddie Freeman. I know he had to walk off in Game 3. You didn't have much out of Mookie Betts. I know he had the two-run single in Game 6. And Shohei Ohtani had his moments, but wasn't consistently amazing, especially on the mound. You had that, and it took Andy Páez, who couldn't hit a baseball with an oar throughout the series, terrible throughout, getting subbed in the ninth inning, and if he didn't get subbed in for Tommy Edman in center field, that play is not made. The series is probably over. It took him. It took Miguel Rojas, who didn't play and didn't start until Game 6 of that World Series at second base to come in. It took those two. It took Max Muncy, who did absolutely nothing throughout the World Series up until that point, which is such an unheralded play, basically opened up the lid. That was on Trey Savage, too, the Blue Jays' best pitcher, that home run in the top of the eighth inning. It took him. It took Andy Páez. It took Miguel Rojas on a number of different plays. It took Will Smith behind the plate on the force out in the top of the ninth and the bottom of the ninth, and also on the solo shot. It took Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It took this whole island of the unheralded part of the Dodgers to win that series. And it took another unheralded part, well, not really, Game 6, the end of the game, who was in center field? Justin Dean, guy never plays, never gets at-bats, to make the heads-up play, to throw his hands up when that ball goes into deep center, and it's a wedgie to basically force a ground rule double and kill the Blue Jays' momentum. That's another unheralded play that probably saved the Dodgers' season. Right then and there are 4 to 5 guys who are making league minimum or 2-league minimum that were the difference maker in the Dodgers winning that series. That is why baseball is the great equalizer. I'm so pleased to see that baseball has had a big couple of weeks because they had a great postseason all throughout it. You could go down the list. But what we saw in Game 6 and Game 7 is the epitome of drama, is the epitome of back and forth, and is the epitome of really resilience. Because the Dodgers show you that not only are they obviously well-constructed and they might be too good, they're probably too powerful, but they got guts. And they're unafraid and they're winners. That's where you got to give Dave Roberts, the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and you got to give all those unheralded players on the Dodgers their flowers for basically winning them the series. Wasn't Mookie Betts. It wasn't Freddie Freeman. It wasn't really even Shohei. It wasn't even Ohtani. Yamamoto's a $325 million pitcher. Fine. All right, have that one. He was a World Series MVP for a reason, and he deserves it. You got to give your thanks to Miguel Rojas, who Dodger fans wanted to, send down to AAA. Andy Páez, who had one hit basically throughout the postseason. And you got to give it to Max Muncy and Will Smith. Those guys saved the season. As good of a game as you could possibly imagine. Is that the best baseball game you ever watched, Damian?
Probably has to be. I mean, the way it all ended, the way it all went down with that unlikely hero being in Miguel Rojas and then just going into the extra innings in Toronto. That's another thing because that stadium was rocking both Game 6 and Game 7. So just the way it all went down, I mean, it has to be the best game I've ever seen.
Has to be one of, if not the best game in recent memory in Major League history. You could always go back to the David Freese game, 11 innings, Rangers-Cardinals. In 2011, where Joe Buck's "We'll See You Tomorrow Night" was as good, iconic of a call as you ever see. That was one of the best back and forth games in baseball history. You could go to the Cleveland Indians and Chicago Cubs game with the Davis home run and the weather delay and not winning it in 108 years. All that all goes into it. But that what we saw in Game 7, I know it was, the implication wasn't there. I know Toronto hadn't won in 30 years, but the Dodgers were there last year. In terms of pure baseball dramatics, that was as good as it gets. As good as it gets. And I didn't think they got anything wrong. There was no brutal play. The umpires were not terrific, but they mostly got all the major calls right. I'm floored. Where does that rank in terms of the best sporting events you watched this year, 2025?
Wow.
It's got to be, for me, in the top three.
I was going to say top three.
We're going to get into our top three a little later on in the show. But if you're a baseball fan, if you're a sports fan, what you saw in Game 7 was the epitome of how good it can get. Really was. It out-dominated the football. I'm talking about it cinematically and probably a little too dramatically, but that's just how good that series was. Because it had everything. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, let's put this into perspective for a second. He went Game 6, and he had 96 pitches. This is after he went Game 2, and he pitched a complete game, only allowing one run and getting the Dodgers a win on the road. He goes back in Game 6, do-or-die time. The Blue Jays have outplayed the Dodgers thoroughly in the last two games. Myself included, thought the Dodgers were close to dead. He goes in and pitches a gem. Not as great as he has been, but still. Then he comes in, 0 days rest. People who don't understand baseball don't really understand just how crazy that actually is. When Madison Bumgarner, who's widely heralded as one of the best, if not the best, postseason pitcher of all time, came in Game 7 of the 2014 World Series and pitched five scoreless in Game 7 on 2 days to 3 days rest after pitching a complete game shutout in Game 5 for the Giants. People think that's crazy. 0 days rest, and he was able to go 2 2/3 scoreless, pick up the win, and get the game closing outs. He was the Terminator. He was a Terminator. You want to talk about a pitcher that you're looking at the next great one? Look no further than Yamamoto. He might be my favorite player from this series because that is as crazy of an athletic sporting feat, high-pressure situation as you could possibly imagine, which is why you get nervous because there's going to be another Japanese phenom probably after him, and there's going to be one after him, and Roki Sasaki hasn't even caught his groove yet. And when these guys keep coming, and they continue to go to the Dodgers because it's basically like all the best friends hanging out and they're all great baseball players and it's a good market for Japanese baseball players. When that continues to happen, they're going to need to start doing a draft for the Japanese players instead of just jumping into free agency. 888-760-3776. Where does 2025 World Series rank for you, especially Game 7, in terms of the great sporting events you've seen this year? Give us your thoughts in reacting to that all-time classic of a game. Russo and Rizzo, Colin Russo. No Mike Rizzo today. He is out. We got Damian Perez, 888-760-3776. Number to get into the program. Download the ESPN South Florida app today. The ESPN South Florida app is your place for Russo and Rizzo. For Theoretically Speaking, you can listen to on the app just about anywhere. It's free to download. And also listen to Inter Miami English and Spanish. Listen to Kaiser University football games and listen to the Florida Panthers on their quest for a three-peat, had a big win over the Dallas Stars over the weekend down in Sunrise on a shootout. Brad Marchand, who's having a superb season himself. So that was a big win for the Florida Panthers on their quest for a three-peat. You can listen to all that on the ESPN South Florida app. Go download today and keep your beat going with South Florida sports. Colin Russo, Damian Perez will take a time out here. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. Listen, if you've been in a car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall, my friends Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine at Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys, they're here to fight for you. They don't charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. Why settle for just any attorney? Demand the best. Demand Anajar and Levine today because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. Take that one phone call. Take back control of your life. Don't wait. Call for the free consultation now. Call 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Take back control with Anajar and Levine. Colin Russo, Damian Perez with us. 888-760-3776. Number to get into the program. Is it better off that the Dodgers won that series? Is it better off that the Blue Jays could have, would have won that series? Joe Davis and John Smoltz were on the call for Fox. Pretty great call throughout listening back. I was not able to watch because I was in a bar in Jacksonville. We were at the Florida-Georgia game over the weekend. That was myself, Theo Dorsey, Christina Costanza, a couple other teammates that we have here at ESPN West Palm. And I was watching the game in a bar in Jacksonville, and for some reason this bar would not turn on the game audio, which is driving me crazy. because we don't need to listen to this godforsaken song when it's ninth inning. There's, you know, hey, come on. There's three guys on base, and I'm trying to listen to the game audio in the bar, and nobody's willing to do it. So that's problem number one. But listening back to Joe Davis and John Smoltz on the call, let's just go through the game a little bit. All right, Shohei Ohtani comes out, gets in trouble almost immediately throughout the game. And people were upset because Shohei Ohtani, who led off the game, got on base with a single, got all the way to third and got stranded to finish off that top of the first inning. They gave him a little extra time to warm up on the mound in between. And everybody's, you know, clamoring, oh, why are they allowing Shohei to do this? Why are they allowing him to warm up, please? Oh, my gosh. I mean, come on. And that was a big deal. You know, John Schneider, the manager of the Blue Jays, came out and complained about it. The umps, guys, take it easy, all right? He was just running the base paths. We could give the guy an extra 10 pitches to get warmed up. Nonetheless, Bo Bichette, who couldn't move all series. Shohei Ohtani's got two men on. Bo Bichette does what? Here's what happened in the third inning to kick off and open up the scoring in the game.
Fly ball deep center. Edmonds goes.
There's Bo Bichette's home run to take an early lead, 3-0 to me, in fact. How about that? All right, you go in further into the game. All right, you know, Teoscar Hernandez is able to get a sack fly to get another run in from Tommy Edmond. It's 4-2, and we're in the top of the eighth. We're within single digits outs of the Blue Jays getting their first World Series in just about 30 years. I think this is the most underrated play of the entire game because Treya Savage, who has been the Blue Jays' best pitcher throughout the postseason, had 11 strikeouts 2 days prior, has been dominant to this point. What does Max Muncy do? Even with nobody on it, even if it didn't tie the game, here's what Max Muncy did in the top of the eighth inning.
The 1-1 from you, Savage. Muncy hits a high drive to deep right field, headed for the pole and gone. Max Muncy brings the Dodgers back to within one with a no-doubt shot.
And after that, we talked about it. When that actually happened, and once you got to the through the eighth, and you knew because it was going to be Kike, then it was going to be Rojas, and then it was going to be Ohtani. You knew within three batters that Ohtani was going to get it at bat. That's what anybody was thinking about. So they put in Jeff Hoffman, the Blue Jays do, their closer up one in the top of the ninth. You got one out, Miguel Rojas with a full count, payoff pitch. What happens? Miguel Rojas, who, by the way, hadn't gotten a home run since September 18th and hadn't gotten a home run off a righty pitcher all year. Here's what Miguel Rojas has to say.
Payoff. Drilled to left field and deep and gone! No way! Miguel Rojas!
That's as good as it gets. That's the best one, Damian. When he goes, no way.
Yeah, I love no way. That's
the fan in him coming out. And
we all had that same reaction just looking at that pitch as it left his bat.
No way. No way. Guy who doesn't hit home runs, who is not a great power hitter, who has not done much of anything this postseason. That? He's in the lineup for his glove, and just because he's better than Andy Páez. Unbelievable.
With Ohtani just warming up right
with
behind
Ohtani,
him.
With Ohtani, that's all anybody was thinking about. It's going to be Ohtani with two outs. Down one in the World Series. And I'll tell you this, Ohtani would not have gotten a hit there. It would have been, and I know it was different, but like with that type of leverage, down one, oh my gosh.
This guy had nothing to lose at the end of the day.
Nothing to lose. And then you get to the bottom of the ninth and a number of things happen. They load the bases, they're in a lot of trouble. And Rojas, once again, our guy, Miguel Rojas. Bases loaded, one out. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, IKF, who Yankee fans know well. On third base, a short lead. Little blooper to the second baseman. Here's what Rojas has to do.
Varsho. Roller to second. Rojas comes home in time. And it's Miguel Rojas who ties it in the top of the ninth. Saves it in the bottom of the ninth.
Now, I was glad I was watching this specific play with people to get that second out in the ninth inning because I was around a bunch of people in the bar. Everybody, oh, ears perked up. Oh, my gosh, is he safe? Is he out? And they called it out in the field. And so what happened with Darton Varsho is bases loaded. Everybody has to advance. Launched a little ground ball to Miguel Rojas at second base. Fires it right to home plate. Will Smith has to lift his leg off the bag to catch the baseball. And then he has to bring the foot back down before IKF, who bizarrely is sliding feet first. He didn't dive for it. I honestly, if you want to give IKF problems for anything, it's not off the leadoff third base. It's his slide. He's not sliding. If anything, run through it. Run through it, number one, or two, slide with your hands. I don't know why he's sliding with his feet. It seemed like he was trying to make a moment out of it. You know, his hands were up. Point being, that play was as close as it gets. Within hundredths of a second, it seemed. Will Smith's leg off the bag and then on the bag. Did you think he was out when that happened live in person, Damian?
I did. I just felt like everything was going right for the Dodgers. And at that instant, I kind of felt, it was just like a feeling. Yeah, he's definitely out.
And what Dave Roberts did, and this is probably the best move he made all game, not even pitching Yamamoto, the best move he made all game was taking out Tommy Edman at center field and putting in Andy Páez, who has been a terrible bat. Tommy Edman's been a better bat. But he put him in for his defense because he knew that the rest of the game, and especially at a tie game, defense is going to be paramount. So he puts in Andy Páez at center field, and with still three men on, two outs, everybody's eyes are on, can something happen here? Ernie Clement, who, by the way, broke somehow, some way. What a bizarre stat when they pulled that up. Ernie Clement, who has been in and out of AAA, has not been a big-time player. That just goes to show the randomness of baseball. Launches one to deep left center field. I thought this was landing. I thought this was going to be the game. Ernie Clement launched one left center field. See what happens.
Fly ball to left field. Hernandez on the run with Páez over his head. Páez runs him over.
Oh, my gosh.
Makes the catch. Sends game seven to the 10th.
Oh, my gosh. That is as awesome of a play as anybody could ever make at center field. Kike Hernandez, who, by the way, for some odd reason, is playing left, trying to run underneath it like he's going to basket catch it, like Willie Mays at the Polo Grounds, and he's basically running like he's a wide receiver on a go route. Andy Páez goes, absolutely not. Get out of my way. Basically seals that ninth inning with Yamamoto on the mound and keeps the Dodgers alive. Once that happened, once they got out of that jam, I thought the Dodgers were going to win this.
Inevitable at that point.
There was no way. I thought the Blue Jays were going to walk it off. I really did, especially after that IKF right or that close. I thought there's no way. A team that has been as good as any team we've seen in the postseason, getting the ball just into play. I mean, even with one out, you need a sac fly. You need the ball in the sky. You need it in the outfield. You need something just to advance the runners. I thought right then and there, after they got that bases loaded, that Blue Jays were going to win. I was still on that. Blue Jays, Blue Jays, Blue Jays. The second Andy Páez made that play in the ninth, I know this is not a shocker, there was no way the Dodgers were losing this game. There was no way the Dodgers were losing this game after that. There are baseball gods at play here. Something is going on. Dave Roberts is, you know, pitching a masterclass, so to speak. That is how crazy it gets. So you get into the extras. And the problem with Game 3, Damian, I never asked you about this. Game 3, 18 innings, ended at 3 a.m. Did you catch any of it? It's late into the night. I know nobody in this office did.
I'll be honest. I did not watch the whole thing.
You were not awake for that ending.
I was not.
So even when you got there, the problem with that game was an all-time classic. It was the second longest World Series game of all time. But once you got past the Kershaw at-bat in the 12th inning, when he gets out of a bases-loaded jam, gets one out, that was on Nathan Lucas, who has been a good at-bat, not in the World Series, but generally throughout the postseason. Once you got that through, the next five or six innings, you're sort of waiting for something to happen, and nothing really did until the Freddie Freeman home run. This game was great because you had two high-leverage innings where everybody was just on their toes, and you didn't have to dive deep into the bullpen. That's why this game was a better game, because it had it all, and it wasn't too much. It wasn't 2.5 hours longer than it needed to be. It's perfect. Perfect. So you get to the 11th, and Mr. Inevitable himself, Will Smith, does what? Does this.
Smith, it's a high fly ball to deep left field. It's got a chance. It is gone. It's Will Smith in game seven.
Will Smith. Sixth straight World Series wins for guys named Will Smith. Of course, the relief pitcher and then the catcher for the Dodgers. That's bizarre. But nonetheless, Will Smith able to put him ahead 5-4. Then Yamamoto. I actually thought they were going to take out Yamamoto. I know Sasaki was all over the place with his control at the end of game 6. But I actually thought they were going to pull Yamamoto for a sign of trouble. He even gets himself into trouble. Runners on first and third, one out. Yamamoto on the mound. Can he close it? Here's what happens.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Kirk bounces one up the middle. Bats to the back. Over to first to beat the champ. You got to knock him out. The Dodgers stand tall and win back-to-back titles.
Can you even blame me for rooting for the Dodgers at that point? To beat the champ, you got to knock them out. As good of a last five innings as baseball ever gets. Shame on anybody who missed that game. They know who I'm talking about. Shame on anybody who missed that game. As good as baseball gets. And Mookie Betts to close it, making a crucial double play at second. Alejandro Kirk, who can't run out of first baseman to save his life. That was it. Call it. Finish it. 5-4. They got Shohei Ohtani getting interviewed after the game with his interpreter. Shohei, we all know you speak English.
Yeah, that thank you was way
Did you
too
hear
smooth.
The thank
yes,
you, guys?
We'll find that audio.
We'll play that after the break. Shohei Ohtani is doing an interview with the guys on the desk, post-game, Burkhart, all the guys. And he's answering in Japanese with his interpreter, as he always does. And then at the end, he goes, thank you, guys. It was a little too smooth for my liking. We'll play that after the break. But Shohei Ohtani, you're not fooling anybody, pal. I know he's answering for the Japanese fans, and the rating hasn't even come out in Japan. 11 million people watched in Canada. 11 million people. On top of the 26 million who watched in the United States. All right. 37 right then and there. I'm willing to bet that over 13 million people watched it in Japan. Shohei starting on the mound too. I'm willing to bet over 13 million people watched it. That game did 50 million at least worldwide. Oof. NFL. That's the type of game that the NFL raises their eyebrows at. They got to, wow, 50 million internationally? Oh, my goodness.
That's why the NFL is doing what they're doing with these international games.
There's an international appeal to it. And anybody who wants to argue that the NBA has got more of a cultural appeal to themselves, baseball is still king at its best. It is. There was a game 7 in the NBA with the Thunder and the Pacers. 16 million watched that. 16. 26 domestically, and that's not even including the international appeal. And the baseball sort of had a perfect storm. Big star, huge market. Both two countries really represented with Japan and the Dodgers and Canada and Toronto. Perfect storm, no doubt. No doubt. But if you want to talk about a true people have to watch it appeal, you can follow the NBA. You don't need to watch the NBA. That's the NBA's problem. But you can't argue now. You can't argue that the MLB has a bigger appeal to the common fan that wants to watch a game compared to the NBA. So I'm done hearing that. Might be more popular. The players might be more popular. Fine. But not many. No, more people don't want to watch. Neither here nor there. Damian Perez, Colin Russo. I want to play that Shohei audio because something's up there. Shohei, we know you speak English. We know. Get into a whole lot more. We got a packed NFL Sunday to break down. 888-760-3776. We're going to give our top three sporting events from 2025. That's all to come. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Listen, if you're an athlete and you're putting the time in the gym, you're getting up in the morning, you're going for your runs, you're doing your cardio, you're going for lifts, you want to see results, you're just not seeing all of it, it's probably because you're not fueling right. VitaCost Sports Certified Marketplace, it's your place that's built for athletes and fitness enthusiasts who like to train hard and understand what benefits of clean supplementation and nutrition can do for you. Whether you're prepping for a triathlon, you're prepping for a race, grinding in the gym, just trying to be a little bit more health conscious, VitaCost is your go-to for leveling up your game. Their new Sports Certified Marketplace has over 400 performance-enhancing supplements, all certified, which means they're free of banned substances that help you level up your game. Visit VitaCost.com/sport-certified to make your purchase today. Use code ESPN20 for 20% off. Level up your game over at VitaCost. You got Colin Russo and Damian Perez with you. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. No Mike Rizzo in the house today. having a good time, streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X at ESPN West Palm and ESPN South Florida. Shohei Ohtani, who had his moments of heroics throughout the postseason and throughout the games, throughout the World Series specifically. One thing about him that I don't know if I buy is that he needs a translator. Maybe he does it just to appeal to the Japanese audience and he wants to talk to the home fans. I get that. Take a listen to what Shohei Ohtani, here's how he was talking on the desk, Burkhart, Ortiz, all the guys on the Fox desk after the game. And he was having his translator translate his answers. And they asked him about Yamamoto coming back out there. They asked him about all the big spots of the game. And to finish off the interview, here's what Shohei had to say.
Good yourself, my friend. Congratulations. Another World Series. You came in to win a World Series. You got two now. So we'll have to see if you can do it again next year. But enjoy this, Shohei. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Shohei,
you had amazing.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Not fooling me. You speak English, my friend. You speak English. Shohei can come on this show right now, and he could co-host this today, and he wouldn't have a problem. He would not have a problem. Damien, you agree? As somebody who's bilingual himself, that is somebody who knows
way
English.
Way too smooth. That thank you was way too smooth. It came out way too natural, and it's almost like he speaks English all the time. He just doesn't want to do it in front of the
you
world.
You think he does that behind closed doors?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when
he's
you
been
see
playing
him
in
interact,
the United States. He's been playing in the United States for 6 years.
When you see him interact with his teammates, that doesn't look like someone who's never spoken a word to his teammates in English.
Yeah, I got to imagine making $700 million being the game.
And I get it. I mean, who wants to deal with the media at the end of the day sometimes?
Who wants to deal with us? I get it. You're right. And they're sitting here thinking, if I could just, play the persona.
I
have to do a whole lot less media spots. I have to do a whole lot less. And he only does media after. He only talks to the media after he pitches, which is weird. That's part of his thing. That's part of his deal. He only does it after he pitches, not after he hits. But if he's thinking Shohei Ohtani, he's like, all right. If I just keep the translator around, I don't have to do public appearances. They don't stick me at the fundraiser dinners. They don't put me, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. I mean, it's a little easier to live in a little anonymity. And then Shohei Ohtani, this is another part he had at the ring ceremony at Dodger Stadium, which they had yesterday. Take a listen to Shohei Ohtani's English address to the crowd.
Hello, hello. I want to say that I'm so proud of this team. And then I want to say you guys are the greatest fans in the world. And then I'm ready to get another ring next year. Let's go.
So if I'm Shohei Ohtani, I only have to speak English 3 total times throughout the year. Sign me up for that. Sign me up. I only have to do it at the ring ceremony. I could do it with the Fox guys post game for 5 seconds, and then I can do it in the lot in the clubhouse behind closed doors with all the guys. All right, fair game. You swindled everybody. You swindled everybody. That's fair, but he totally speaks English.
Yeah,
we're dying on that hill. It's all right.
At least enough to give an interview in English. I mean,
and I'm willing to admit that Roki Sasaki and Yamamoto have not been here as long as Ohtani has. I'm sure they're going to learn English. I'm not saying they have to, but I'm sure they're going to learn English, and they're getting there. But Ohtani's been here long enough where I assume he does know. I assume the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, and all these guys are thinking, if you're going to make all this money and be this good and be surrounded by an English-speaking manager who doesn't speak Japanese, it probably suits you to learn the language. And I'm sure he does. And he does, and he does it quietly. So credit to him, because I know when Roki Sasaki was in a closing situation at Citizens Bank against the Phillies, and then they asked him postgame about all the Philly fans giving him grief, he straight up says, I don't understand English. I don't know what they're saying to me. So it's fine. All right. Fair enough. I guess that's another benefit, is the trash talk from the American fan does not get underneath your skin. Game 7 went to the Dodgers. They came back down from 3-2 in the 2025 World Series. Game 7 was up near the top of the sporting events I've seen in 2025. Damien, do you have 3 to 5 in mind, sporting events that rival or that the 2025 Game 7 of the World Series, does it enter into that stratosphere for you? Is it in that category? Or
yes,
can you think of sporting events that have triumphed it?
Another one that comes to mind freshly, it's like when you brought this up, that was the first one that came to mind, was that Carlos Alcaraz versus Sinner
on the French
Grand
Open
Slam final. In the French Open.
And Damien and I watched that together.
Oh, we were right here for that.
We were in Sunday huddle on a Sunday morning, and we were watching that first set and thinking, boy, is Carlos dead?
Yep, and it was one of those things where, similar to the Dodgers, Blue Jays, you just didn't know where it was headed. Because at some point, Sinner had the win. I think he had like the match point.
He had
like
triple championship point in the fourth set, 5-3.
Carlos pulled out. Like, it was just unbelievable. It was just the cinema. That's the word. That's the theme, I would say, of these games. It's just the cinema that these games bring. It's really the epitome of sports, to be honest.
I think that was the best. I think that takes number one for me. I'm going to be honest.
That's right at the top for me.
I think that takes number one. I think that French Open final, Sinner Alcaraz, which Christian Catt and Mike Rizzo did not even know was on TV, by the way, which is a joke. Nonetheless, Damien Perez agrees that is probably the best sporting event I watched all year to this point. Number two, I think I might give it to Game 7. And I don't know if I'm really rock solid there. Do you have another one in mind that pops to mind? Because I have one more that I think comes in that category.
That's a perfect number two, because for everything that the game brought, all the narratives going into it, all the narratives at the beginning of the season, the unlikely hero that there was, like Marcos Rojas, not just on that home run, but also on that defensive fielding play. So everything added up, I think, the culmination of the event and the context as well. That was a game seven. That was a clinching game. You win that game, you pretty much bring the bacon home.
So yeah.
With everything the whole cake that baked, I think that's up there for number two.
Yeah, I'm going to go that one. And you know what one also comes into mind? Was McIlroy versus Justin Rose on a playoff on 18, final round of the Masters, Rory trying to win his the Grand Slam of all the majors, and he hadn't had a Masters. He was looking to kind of not restore glory. He's been great, but get that Masters, get that jacket, and Justin Rose was hot in his tail, shooting 6-under in the final round onto a playoff on 18. Everybody's wondering if McIlroy is going to blow it, and if Rose, who was absolutely electric throughout. I thought that was probably the third best sporting event I watched all year. That Sunday at the Masters, that French Open final between Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner, and then Game 7 of the World Series are probably the three best events I watched all year. And there was a couple NBA playoff games, a couple Stanley Cup games that come into the foresight once you start thinking and diving into it. Game 2 Stanley Cup between the Oilers and the Panthers comes into mind in the Stanley Cup final. Game 1 Knicks Pacers when Tyrese Halliburton had the game
that was
tying.
Game.
We thought it was a game winning shot.
Yes.
Remember the one that bounced high off the rim and he does the choke signal to Reggie Miller checked his foot was on the line.
They still
went to
ended OT, up winning.
And they still ended up winning and everybody was nervous that they wouldn't. That was probably the best game of that postseason, and there were a number of good games. It was a good NBA playoff. That comes to mind. Game 1 against the Thunder Pacers when Tyrese Halliburton, again, hits the home, steals game 1 off the game winner. That one pops to mind.
Nobody thought they would win that game in Oklahoma.
Nobody thought they'd win that game. Everybody thought it would be a 5-game series. They were able to push it 7. We were robbed of a great game 7
because
Halliburton got hurt. That pops to mind in terms of the great sporting events of the year to this point. Super Bowl didn't do it. Super Bowl did not do it.
Yeah.
You know, Bills Chiefs AFC Championship game was up there. That was a great game. You know, it hurts because they screwed up the fourth and inches with Josh Allen on the sneak. They screwed that up, and that was an incorrect call, and the Bills got screwed. Now they got the ball back again. It was a whole thing, but that stains the game to me a little bit, but that was an all-time great game. And outside of that, those are the five or six that come to mind immediately. And I'm not a soccer fan. I know Damien Perez is. And to this day, top three sporting events, top five sporting events I think I've ever watched. It's World Cup final, Argentina
that
and France.
Was unbelievable.
That's probably the best soccer match I've ever watched.
Yeah, that's up there for sure. That's up there for sure for anybody, any soccer fan.
Best one I've ever watched for sure. The implication, that was probably the
back and forward.
Right. If I were to, you know, chalk it up and think of one, I don't follow the season as in tune as somebody like Damien Perez or Mike Rizzo, who's not here today. Are there any others that I'm missing? Is there some in soccer that I'm missing?
If we're thinking like what the best match, that is honestly, I can't think of any match that has been played since that match that will kind of compete with it. So to me, that's probably the epitome of a soccer match. That's probably the best.
You got to think implications, right? You got to think. And I watched the Champions Final, which was at MetLife. And I actually watched that. Oh, that was an easy one with Chelsea.
PSG.
And they dominated. Yep. And that was an easy one.
Everyone thought PSG would win that, too. PSG coming into that game, absolutely dominated.
That was probably the most implicating game of the season. Yep, Am I wrong there?
It was the Club World Cup. So, yeah, at a club level, absolutely was the most implicating game. And coming into it, everyone thought PSG would absolutely dominate that because they've been dominating the entire tournament. And Chelsea absolutely destroyed them. I don't think there
destroyed
was a chance.
Them.
Yeah, I don't think there was a chance in that game.
Not close. It was quick. Yeah. That was a game I actually watched at a hostel in Peru with three guys from the Netherlands and two from England. So I was watching it. These are the people you need to watch it with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I remember just right then and there, implicating game because it was right after Wimbledon that happened because Wimbledon, Yannick Sinner, Alcaraz, in which Sinner won easy. So I watched both of those actually in my hostel in Cusco, Peru. But outside of that, that's it. If you're thinking about the best sporting events of the year, you can't do NFL yet because the NFL postseason, we're going to think of the previous one. You're going the Game 7 of the World Series, French Open Final between Sinner and Alcaraz, Masters Final Round. I'd even throw in the Ryder Cup that Sunday. It was very dramatic. It didn't have a great finish after the missed putt by Russell Henley, but that comes up. But outside of that, you're thinking of a couple NBA games. Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final was the best game. It wasn't a 7-game series, but that was probably the best game, even if you want to go to 7 between the Maple Leafs and the Panthers as well. NCAA tournament, Duke blowing that game to Houston comes to mind, up 12 in that Final Four. That was pathetic.
Walter Clayton's moment in the Final Four was also unbelievable.
Absolutely. So those are a couple that come to mind. There's not all-time great college games. There's all-time great collapse with Duke. But I don't know if that sneaks into that category. I'm just thinking off the top here. Those are probably the best I could think of this year. And I don't know if we will see a better sporting event the rest of the year because it's all going to be regular season and the beginning parts of the college football playoff the rest of the way. That is what you're going to look at. And the college football playoff was mostly uncompetitive. End of Texas-Ohio State was good. End of Penn State-Notre Dame was good. Outside of that, the final was not good. 2025, Game 7. I love ranking it. I love figuring out what was the best event of the year. That 2025 Game 7, Blue Jays-Dodgers, I think I put that at number 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And also from a Blue Jays perspective, I mean, how much better could you have played the Dodgers in a 7-game series, in a World Series of the MLB? Coming into it, the Dodgers were the evil empire. How much better could you have been if you were the Blue Jays?
And how haunting is that for a fan?
Yeah.
That half a step short, half a second short.
I mean, George Springer was out there just writing it out.
Couldn't move. Bo Bichette couldn't move. Vladdy Guerrero, who's on the precipice of one of the best postseasons of all time, hitting the baseball. Crucial plays in the field. Ernie Clement broke a record for most hits in a postseason, and they didn't even play in the wild card series. He had 30 hits. You had all your main guys. You had Shane Bieber go. You had Jeff Hoffman go. You had Trey Savage go. You had Max Scherzer, potentially his last ever game, starting on the mound. What could you have done additionally if you're the Toronto Blue Jays in that spot? What could you have done that would have changed that series other than, you know, you got the ticky-tack play here and there. But in terms of how you could play, macro level, how you play, could you really do it any better than what you did? Could you really? You scored 4 runs. I mean, yes, game 6, you didn't do anything. That was when Yamamoto was on full rest. You scored 6 and won by 5 easy in game 5. You controlled the game in game 4. You dominated them in game 1 with Addison Barger getting the game grand slam. You are in one of the more classic head-to-head game 3s we've ever seen, and you scored 5 runs. They played better than the Dodgers did. But that's the inevitability that is attached to that team, which I'm nervous about. When there's inevitability attached, right now, Damien, you and I can look at each other and say the Dodgers are going to win at least 95 games next year.
Yeah.
We could say that. I don't know if we could say that for the Blue Jays, who didn't this year.
That was
We don't know if that team's going to be back.
That was their chance.
Because that's the same team that we saw 2 years ago who wasn't any good. We don't know if that team's going to be back. So that's where you get nervous. You know the Dodgers are going to be back. You know. They didn't have Blake Snell the whole year. I mean, they had injuries left and right on the pitching staff. Glasnow, in and out. It's different. You know that the Dodgers are going to be there, and you don't know about anybody else. That's the randomness to baseball. The Dodgers have almost broken that. The randomness to baseball outside of the Yankees making the postseason most times and the Dodgers making the playoffs. They won the division 13 out of 14 years. Eesh. Parody. Not in that division. We'll get into the 5-5 as we enter into the second hour. First, wake up in the morning. Go get started your day with a win. Go over to F45 downtown West Palm Beach. They got class-style workouts. It's functional fitness. So when you want to feel more mobile with your day, you want to get more strength, get your cardio up, get your heart rate up, do that at F45. They have classes in the morning and classes in the evening. Two coaches on site making sure you're doing everything right. They got two coaches that are talking to you. You could actually make a relationship with these coaches. You know them. They know you. All the people in classes, you start to recognize people, a bunch of like-minded fitness individuals who like going to certain classes, having a good time, loud music. It's in and out in 40 minutes. Turn your brain off, follow along with what's on the screen, and then boom, your workout's done. You feel great about the rest of your day. That's F45 downtown West Palm Beach. Get more information today. We'll do a little 5-5 on the other side of things. Get into what we saw over the weekend on the football side. 2 hours to go right here on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.